Have your attention. We start to get started. I'd like to welcome everybody this morning to Active Transportation Committee. Mr. Bateman, do we have you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so we have Myron Bateman from Tooele County on the telephone. Anybody else? Okay, so the first thing we would like to do is welcome introductions, and I'd like to have people go around the table, but I just want to note we have a couple of new faces from Utah County, a couple cities here, and we want to welcome you. And maybe when we're going around the introductions, which is something we always do, why don't you just take an extra minute and tell us a little bit about your city and about what you guys have done on active transportation, and share something about yourselves. So let's start over here. Jory?
Jory Johnner, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Jeff Oiler, Davis County.
Barry Merton, Davis County.
Kirk Christensen, Mayor of Salem, down on the south end of the county and Utah, and we're just growing really fast. And the trail system, we're trying to get it connected to all the cities, and it's before it grows in, and we don't have a chance to do that, so.
I've done a little bit of riding around Salem, so it's a nice place to ride a bike.
Yes.
Bill Wright, newly elected mayor of Payson, spent 31 years as a police officer for Payson City, and found myself running for mayor and won. Our community is growing as well, about 20,000 people have an active group of people who like to bike. This year we're going to be a start and stop for the Tour of Utah. And we have an area known as Fort Bay that the city owns. Quite a lot of bike enthusiasts have made trails there, so we'd like to keep that area pristine.
Thank you.
Laura Hansen, I'm UTA's Director of Planning.
Phil Sarnoff, Wake Utah.
Scott Hess with Wasatch Front Regional Council.
I'm Jeff Silvestrini, Mayor of Mill Creek.
Andrew Gruber with Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Joe Shulman, Mayor of South Weber City.
Michelle Weems, Director of City Council.
Burbank, Utah Department of Health.
Daryl Valentine, Morgan County.
Katie Gerard, Wasatch Front Staff.
Evan Curtis, State Planning Coordinator.
Heidi Goodhart, Utah Planning.
Hello everyone, I'm Ginger Cannon. I'm the Active Transportation Manager at the University of Utah.
Sarah Beer.
Alex Rory, Wasatch Front Staff.
Megan Thompson, WFRC Staff. Holly Hunt, WFRC Staff.
Bert Granberg, also with WFRC.
Ted Knowlton, WFRC.
Cassie Younger with Sunnyvale City.
And that over here.
It's Kim Schwabing, Tooele County Health. And out in Tooele County, we are trying to gear up for population growth. And with Google going in, with Amazon going in, with UPS, we are going to have a lot of people serving out the Tooele County area. It would be awesome if we could have a biking path for those people to ride their bikes that are moving out that way. So anyway, we're actively working on that.
Always a lot.
Wolf? You want to just introduce yourself?
Bill Summerhorn, Salt Lake County.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ed Hacker with Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Tim Harps with Forex Engineers.
Michael Butler, AECOM.
Emily Boiling with Salt Lake County Health Department.
Kevin Hielski, Salt Lake County Health Department.
Excuse me, Mark Benigni with Weaver Pathways.
David Aldridge, UDOT.
Okay, is that everybody? Okay, well, welcome again. So next thing we have is to take a look at our minutes from the last meeting on January 10th. Are there any comments or looking for a motion to approve those?
I'll make a motion to approve them.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. Second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved, thank you. So is there anybody that would like to offer public comment to the committee?
Elliot?
Okay. Andrew, you want to offer public comment for somebody else?
On behalf of Elliot? No, it's okay.
Okay, then we'll move on then, I guess. So that chair report's real brief. We had the Utah Bike Summit yesterday, which I was able to attend most of. And I want to thank the people that organized that. It was a well-run affair, informative. I don't know, how many of you had the opportunity to go to that? Okay, quite a few. So anyway, I think that's a great event to bring alternative transportation advice to go to the four and get people to cross pollinate a little bit. So thanks a lot for that. Other than that, I'm thrilled to announce we're getting a grant that we'll talk about later, I guess, right? For Mill Creek to do some town center planning, and that will obviously involve some alternative transportation, biking and other transit options for a town center in Mill Creek, which will be in the area of 13th and Highland at about 33rd South, you know where that is. So. Okay. Next off, then.
Can I actually add? Yeah. I will add one thing, if sure. I may. So I saw Heidi rode her bike here. Well done. It's actually not a bad ride. Bert, you ride your bike here today? Okay.
Windy.
For those of you
it's windy and storms later.
Right. For those of you that aren't interested in riding quite that far, do either of you ride up from Utah County? No, not today. Okay.
So we're going to talk in a little while. We're going to talk about an opportunity that you will have to do that.
Right. But. What I wanted to say is that some of you know that we are in the process of moving our office. So we have a lease. This is a little update. We have a lease signed to move our WFRC offices to the north end of the gateway in downtown Salt Lake. So we'll be moving this summer. And when we move, it will continue to be accessible easily by driving. It will also be accessible by Front Runner and Trax and walking and biking. So we'll be able to walk the walk or roll the talk or I don't know, whatever. But you'll be able to get there more easily by multiple modes of transportation, which I know is important to folks that are involved in this committee. So this summer we'll be moving.
Do you know this summer is, you know when?
Don't try to pin me down, please, on an exact move date. I do not know exactly when yet.
All right.
We're working on it.
Well, we may have another meeting here.
We'll see. We shall see.
Okay. All right. Then, Ted, do you want to talk to us about connectivity?
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, you're running the PowerPoint.
I got it right here. It's Jory now because the.
You got the clicker?
You're not at the start.
I am not at the start.
No, go to from beginning, top left. And you should have the clicker, Ted, and it was
I have the clicker.
Okay.
I've got the clicker!
Right. More convenient.
All right, so where am I? Where is this? Anybody?
Rome.
Okay, what's the oldest thing that you can see?
Coast.
The river.
Street
network. Right.
Street network.
Yes, the streets are the oldest thing in Rome, and the oldest thing pretty much in every city. And there are parts of Rome that are on their fifth iteration at least of buildings, but the original Roman rights of way are there. And that's why it pays a lot of attention. There's a lot of value in us all paying attention to our streets. Because if there's one thing that we really have to make sure we get right, it is our streets. You can think about every major city in the world and those original street networks endure. So the pitch here at the very front end is let's make sure that collectively we get the most permanent features in our communities right, and those are the streets. So I'm going to talk about what street connectivity is, or just connectivity, why it matters, and then the street connectivity study, and make a pitch for that. And hopefully you'll see why and get into the spirit of getting connected. So street connectivity, you can think of a traditional hierarchical pattern, sort of where little tributaries lead into bigger streets and on. That's a hierarchical pattern. And a connected pattern is where you're able to travel basically more as the crow flies. Okay, you want to go there, you have a route that's more direct to get you where you want to go. It may not just be connected streets, it might be trails that connect through a cul-de-sac, it might be better connections across busy roads, it might be good connections within a development that are private connections between buildings in a private area.
One thing that's important to note in Utah is that we, when we think about connectivity, we often, our mind often goes to the Pioneer rectangular grid. And that's not the only way that connectivity can happen. So this is a pattern of streets where there are through streets, but it's connected elsewhere. But these are more meandering, they're slow, they're local. So connectivity doesn't have to mean every street is a fast through street. One little note about that. So why are we talking about connectivity here today? There's a few reasons, but let me just say one overarching thing, which is that street connectivity tends to be the strategy that unites transportation people regardless of their interest. Bike advocates, walking advocates, transit advocates, road advocates, those trying to reduce congestion, they all support connectivity. And it turns out that it's perhaps the single most robust strategy that there is in community development for good transportation outcomes. And let me explain. So one thing to note is when you have a good connected street pattern, you're able to get to more destinations more easily. So this is showing you the bike shed within a half a mile and how much land area you can cover in a half mile with a connected street pattern and how much land area, much less, you can get to if it's not a connected street pattern, right? So more ability to get to things, more likely to walk, bike, use other modes of transportation. Here are some key differences. If we just focus on the hierarchical pattern here, walking and biking distances are longer. You can see that, right? Pick a red line or pick a blue line. A blue is like a trip to the to the school, and a red is a trip to a store, and an orange is a house, is a trip from Janie to Jack's house. They're dating. So those are longer. Because all of these trips go on and off of the arterial, there's a turning movement on and off. And so every time there's a turning movement on and off of the arterial, it gums up the arterial. If these trips could be not funneled onto the arterial would have the ability to move traffic more easily. So traffic congestion is rougher. The arterial character itself is meaner, and that's because we compensate for this by making arterials wider. We know that they're going to get gummed up with lots of little trips, so we add a lane. And the access to opportunity, our ability to just get to more things, is worse. Now here is that point about an arterial. This is what we do in our communities when we have poor connectivity, and then in turn we have really busy arterials. We compensate by doing things like this. We put up walls that really creates a highly unpleasant walk and bike experience. We have retail streets that are incredibly desirable for convenience retail, and they're terrible for walking retail. And so we see developers who rightly say, look, I want to build a gas station, and I want to build PetSmart. I don't know why PetSmart. But I don't want to build a 15th and 15th style, you know, boutique shopping district, because the street doesn't work for it. Now, so let's flip it. Here's the connected street pattern. Walking and biking distances are shorter. Traffic congestion is smoother. We have less trips on the arterial. We're leaving the arterial for a longer trip. The arterial can be a little thinner. It can be friendlier, and the access to opportunity is better. And we can have commercial districts more like this, so it opens up community development opportunities that fit together and help us create better communities that work better for walking and bicycling. Here's a study from Merced, California, where everything is the same except for the street pattern. The number of households, the number of employees, the land uses are all constant. The difference is the street connectivity, and they ran it through a very detailed simulation. There were 20% fewer vehicle trips, 20% more walk-bike trips. The driving trips themselves were shorter, okay? And here's the important thing as well for, also for Walk Bike, is that there were fewer busy streets. So a lot of those streets were quieter and they felt better for
bicycling.
So, and what about the children? I think that's actually, I heard at the Utah Bike Summit, great event, yesterday, that I think that it's actually 25% of Utah children are obese. Now, this has a lot to do with connectivity. Here is a well-connected, or a school with some poor connections, you can see. And this is a school in the Daybreak area that has lots of excellent connections for kids in the neighborhood. And when researchers went out and looked at Daybreak, they found that 88% of students in the Daybreak neighborhood walk to school, but 17% in similarly situated schools. It's like a limerick. You got that?
Yeah.
Walk. So that's a huge difference. This is about the health of our kids as well. Okay, so are you convinced that street connectivity is a good thing?
Yes.
Okay, and is there a link in your head to why it should matter for the ATC? For active transportation? Okay. So, because of all of these advantages of street connectivity, Wasatch Front Regional Council worked with Mountain Land Association of Governments, UDOT, and UTA. We all came together to produce the Utah Street Connectivity Guide, which includes really well-illustrated things that talk about the benefits of connectivity. An important thing about it is it's not a one-size-fits-all, so it provides strategies that are different for lower density suburban communities, inner ring suburban communities, urban places. So the suggestions it makes, there's a variety of them that suit different kinds of needs and different kinds of communities. These were then test driven in three different kinds of communities, Lehigh, Layton, and Tooele County. And ultimately what the guide does is it helps you assess your level of connectivity, both current and planned. It gives you best practice planning plans and ordinance techniques, street and development standards, and retrofit tools. So it's really, really awesome. This is my closing slide, which is that connectivity is one of these. I think when people learn about it, they love it and they want to do something about it, but we don't always remember to prioritize connectivity in our communities. There's tons of advantages that we talked about. The Street Connectivity Guide is waiting for use. It's a not a one-size-fits-all approach. Key basic things, you can find it on the WFRC.org website. And another key basic thing is if your community wants to explore street connectivity, we have a program with our partners at Salt Lake County, UDOT and UTA, called the Transportation Land Use Connection. So with that, that's an overview of the Utah Street Connectivity Guide, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have, Mr. Chair.
I have a question. How does this apply to US 89 across Davis County between Salt Lake and Auburn?
Right. Well, you know, barriers to connectivity should be addressed to the extent that they can. There's always a cost-benefit equation to that, but to the extent we can, it's always good to try to have good permeability across major facilities. So one of the things that we're doing on I-15 collectively is we're taking a look at how we can improve the access across I-15. So as we plan major roadways, to the extent we can maintain some permeability, it's always a good thing.
The question relates to Highway 89, not I-15.
Right.
It's traditionally been a north-south corridor for cyclists.
Correct.
North and south. We're being told to get off there because it could be made a freeway type of road.
Gotcha. And
we have two representatives from Region 1, Fred and David, if you guys both would like to weigh in on this.
And
great.
So 89 is going to, there's an EIS currently out with public comment, and for conflict reasons,
the concept is that 89 is going to be elevated and frontage roads are going to be placed. So cyclists totally have a right to be using the frontage roads, and those speeds are going to be greatly reduced for automobile traffic, and there's going to be underpasses that allow for connectivity and ease of access to and from the communities on the east and west side. And I think Region 1, as to chime in if I'm misspeaking, is examining a mixed-use trail, so an expanded sidewalk on the east side of that facility. So those things are being incorporated into the EIS.
And I believe they're working with each of the communities along the corridor on exactly what type of facility they want for the trail and then crossings, right? There's additional crossings, so there's going to be interchanges that will be, you'll be able to cross, and then add additional overpasses, so there's more connectivity and probably safer connectivity than what's there right now, right? Right now, you got to hit one of the lights or kind of go at your own. But Heidi's right, the environmental study, I think the final version just came out, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everything I've seen is it's worse now, it's worse in the future than it is now. In terms of
for active
north,
transportation users or for, so can you specify what you mean by worse? Like for active transportation users or congestion or traffic, or can you pinpoint
the
so I can respond to your
well.
Question?
The shoulder rides well. It's busy, so traffic sensitive riders don't like it.
Right.
But our other choices going west, you got to go down to the Denver Rio Grande Western bike path, or weave around through Hupper to get between Salt Lake and Ogden, or take Main Street, Highway 126, I think it is.
It will be now classified as a freeway, and since it's in the urbanized area, bike heads will not be allowed on the freeway. And like Heidi said, there is going to be now a continuous...
There will be one-way frontage roads on each side of the elevated 89, so that will become access restricted, but the frontage roads are still totally open to active transportation users, and there will be shoulder accommodation similar to what's existing now on US 89 on those frontage roads. And there'll be lower speeds, so the speed differential will not be as extreme as it is now existing, as an existing condition on 89.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions for Ted?
Yeah, is the street connectivity guide, is that available on the WFRC website?
Yes.
Yep, WFRC.org.
Good. Thank you. Okay, so next up is Megan, I guess, to build on that, talk about some awards for connectivity.
All right. So this is an exciting time of year for the Transportation and Land Use Connection Program. We are announcing our 2018 awards. The Transportation and Land Use Connection is a partnership between UDOT, UTA, Salt Lake County, and the Wasatch Front Regional Council. The program supports local governments in their planning efforts, implementing the Wasatch Choice Vision. Program goals include maximizing the value of investment in public infrastructure, enhancing access to opportunity, increasing travel options to optimize mobility, and creating communities with opportunities to live, work, and play. So we refer to this program as our Ounce of Prevention program with an annual budget of $1.3 million. It's a lot smaller in dollars than the other things that we do here at the Wasatch Front Regional Council. But the fact that UDOT and UTA partner with this program reflects and speaks to the fact that the impact that these projects have by looking at transportation and land use in a comprehensive, coordinated manner have a really great impact on future investments, maximizing the value of investments that are already there. And this work kind of shows that we're already doing a lot of what SB 136 is asking us to do, to look at these things in a big picture, comprehensive way, to plan for transportation and land use together. And so we're really grateful for our partnership with UDOT and UTA and Salt Lake County, and glad we can make this funding go as far as we've made it go in past years and this year. So this year we have awarded about around 900,000 with TLC funds with a match of 280,000. We have about a 25% match this year, which is really good. It means the program funds are going really far. We're able to reach more communities with hire local matches. We did a total of 13 awards this year, 7 in the Salt Lake urbanized area and 5 in the Ogden-Layton area, and then 1 in Tooele County. 3 of those projects are multi-jurisdictional, so multiple communities coming together, especially with active transportation, recognizing that active transportation, you know, bikes don't stop at the city boundary. Those kind of collaborative efforts, we have 3 of those. So I'm not going to read through this list. I'm going to go through these in the next slides, but all of this is on our website, so it's all posted now. There's an interactive map. For citywide projects, we did 3 of those. There's the Salt Lake City Street Typologies Plan, so looking at, you know, street capacity and land use and seeing if those are matched now, how they can be better matched in the future, and what land uses are appropriate on what streets, etc. The Roy City General Plan and Ordinance Update. This is building on some work that we did with Roy recently to adopt the Roy Downtown Plan and Station Area Plan. So continuing to implement the work that we did in that throughout the rest of their plans and ordinances. And then the Grantsville City General Plan Update. We have 4 plans. I call this slide center plans because they're both town center plans and transit-oriented development plans. There's the Mill Creek Town Center Plan, again, building on some work we're doing with Mill Creek now. Mayor Silvestrini, we've got a Mill Creek General Plan project going, and through that project we've identified a great site for a future center. And so now this work is just going to continue to build on that momentum. The West Jordan Center Station Area Plan, Woods Cross Station Area Plan. These are collaborative projects with UTA, working closely with them as they have property in these areas, as well as interest in, of course, making the best use out of our station areas. And the Ogden Rail Yard Master Plan Study, which is kicking off a long effort of looking at the Ogden Rail Yard area and potential development of that area long term. And then the exciting slide for this group, the Active Transportation and Trails Plan. So we had a really great representation from our active transportation projects this year. We're funding 4 projects that really have a heavy active transportation focus. The South Jordan and West Jordan Active Transportation Plan. This is a cooperative plan between the 2 cities. And actually building on some work we're doing with West Jordan now on the new Bingham Highway connector. Holiday Canal Trail Study. The West Valley Active Transportation Plan, the Plain City Transportation and Trails Master Plan, and then the South Davis, we're calling it the South Davis Active Transportation Plan, but that's North Salt Lake, Centerville, and Bountiful working together. So I'm going to talk about 2 of these projects really briefly.
Hey, just before you go on, I just want to note for Mayor Wright Christensen, so MAG, our partner agency to the South, Mountain Land Association of Government, they also do grant programs for communities to develop active transportation plans. So we partner with them across the border, but you're not seeing any of the Utah County projects listed. Our funds are focused in the WFRC area, but we coordinate with MAG, and they're doing separate awards in the Utah County area.
And actually, along those lines, this is the final project, I almost skipped one. Salt Lake County and the Jordan River Commission are gonna work together to update their blueprint Jordan River plan, and that does at work. I mean, this funding won't go directly to that, but with other funding brought into that project, that does go into Utah County. This is a region-wide plan. This is really exciting. It's long due for an update. So to talk briefly about 2 of the active transportation projects, the South Davis project that I mentioned, this is, again, just a really great example of communities recognizing that, you know, the lines don't stop at the city boundary, working together, and this plan is going to be really implementation-focused, really looking at, you know, broadly, how do these cities connect their systems together, but also, you know, what are maintenance schedules, what are the facility designs for each community, future funding sources, and then working with UDOT and other stakeholders to really make sure that this plan can be implemented, and the next step is really just making it happen. And then the Holiday Transportation and Trails Plan. This project, again, really implementation focused, really working with closely with stakeholders. This is to look at the canal rights of way and their potential to become pedestrian bicycle trails. So they have, you know, already really clear objectives laid out, and this project is really ready to hit the ground running and make a really big difference for Holiday's system. So I know I went through that really quickly. Are there any questions about any specific projects or the program overall?
How many total applications did you receive?
20. 20, yeah. from 24 communities. So that's with communities coming together on one application. So we think, you know, we at least, I get to say yes to more people than I have to say no to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the funding reached a really good group of projects this year, and the active transportation projects really were just really well represented in this pack, and we want that to be the case for years going forward. So if you have active transportation planning ideas for your communities, or want to talk to our staff, of course Scott's the expert on that, so reach out, and this funding is absolutely available for that, we realize, and especially with that street connectivity stuff that Ted talked about earlier, that as well, we really want to work with your communities to see how we can identify some solutions there.
So Megan, do you want to just talk briefly about the application process and the timing on that in terms of how, for next year, how people would apply?
Yeah, so now's the time to start dreaming. In October, letters of intent are due. So this is lined up with the cycles of all of our other programs. So the TAP program as well is on the same cycle. In October, letters of intent are due right around Halloween, spooky deadline. And then in January, applications are due. And we worked this year to get awards out a little earlier so that right here in March we can start working with these communities to plan these projects to be the best they can. So right now we'll be working with these communities to dream up their RFPs, you know, everything we want in that scope, and then go out and for most of these projects find consultant assistants to come in and dive in and really tackle these issues. So October is that next deadline.
And these funds are available in the year that they're programmed, as opposed to our construction funds, which are 2 years out or 5 years out, respectively, right?
Yes, so we're on kind of a rapid cycle. So these funds that we just awarded are available in July. So by the time we get all the cats herded, we'll be ready to start actual work on these projects. And of course it's planning, so we're not buying anything other than services. So. We'll help with all the contracting, we'll do all the administration stuff, we'll take that on to the best of our ability, and then you get to do the fun stuff and work with these consultants to think about what, you know, what possibilities there are for your community.
So I want to say a couple things. First of all, the application, as I've discovered as a new guy, the application process is really rather simple.
Yay.
And easy to do. And the other thing is that Megan and the other people here are great resources. If you have any questions or concerns about that application, I'm happy to talk to you about that, you know, and even in terms of, like, you know, channeling you through the right application process, right grant program, things like that. But anyway, thanks a lot for your help. I appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah, happy to answer any questions at any time about all of this. And we're excited about these projects. So thank you, everyone, for your participation.
I just want Megan briefly mentioned, sort of in passing, Senate Bill 136, which is a real watershed moment in our state. This is a bill that we've been working on and just passed in the last days of the legislative session. Lanise Davenport and our staff has been sending out updates about that, so that should have been going, those legislative updates should be going to all of you, and if you haven't been getting them, please let us know.
We can make sure. In the last week?
You'll get one today. You're going to get another one today. One of the things that legislation requires is enhanced coordination of transportation investment with land use decisions and economic development. You know, we have limited room to grow, and so thinking about the most efficient way to invest infrastructure dollars so that they are cognizant of land use is a more effective strategy going forward. And so that's a lot of what this TLC program is about. And so I think that as we go forward, there's going to be more need and maybe even more benefit to communities from thinking about this transportation and land use connection. Because if you think this through about your areas, your centers, your land use, your general plans, and think about their interplay with transportation, it's actually going to put you in a better position to compete in the future for infrastructure dollars. Because now the state is saying you have to be thinking about this, and they, the state, in allocating infrastructure dollars, is going to be thinking more about your local land use. So this is like tip of the spear on thinking about, you know, it's step one on thinking about your land use, and then the infrastructure investment is going to flow following that. So I think there's going to be even more need for this this kind of thinking as we go forward.
Great. I have just one comment. So they don't they don't let me sit on the TLC Awards review committee for the obvious reasons, because I would be pushing all the AT projects. But just thinking about the impact that this award will have this year in what's already been done. So you have Salt Lake City and South Salt Lake City have very robust plans, updated active transportation plans, and we're now building out from the core. So the core area of our population across the Wasatch Front. You're gonna pick up West Valley, South Jordan, West Jordan, and then going north, if you do North Salt Lake, Bountiful, Centerville, and then you hit Farmington and Kaysville, which already have a relatively new 18-month-old, two-year-old active transportation plan. We're gonna have, through this program, a really large amount of coverage right from that core. And just wanna thank partners, UDOT, UTA, Bike Utah, and others who helped go out and beat the drum for applications this year and talk to local communities, because it wasn't one effort or one person going out there. And we had a huge groundswell. I think there were 11 cities, which is a really big deal in our region to have 20% of the communities come to the TLC program for active transportation updates. And most of those were partnered with other communities, so they weren't unique applications. So look forward to that again in the future, but I just think that, by 2019, 2020, we're gonna have majority of our region covered in new active transportation plans, which is a major step forward for us over the last few years.
I know our TLC time is probably up, but it's just so fun to talk about. Just on along those lines, if you're, our eligibility isn't limited. Project eligibility is based on, does it meet the goals? Is it planning? And buy stuff, like I said. But we really just look at the program mission and the goals and find the fit there. So if it's your city's never talked about active transportation, that's okay. And if it's your city is perfectly planned out except for this one wicked connection problem through your center, that's okay too. We can help you with all of those things. So whether it's the very beginning or right at the end, we'd love to see how we can help. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Megan. So, Callie, you want to talk about transit core routes?
Hi, I'm Callie New. I'm the long-range transit planner for WFRC, and I'm going to talk today about the core route study that's kicking off in the next little bit in partnership. Well, UTA is actually leading the study, and WFRC, MAG, and UDOT are all partners. So, a little bit about core route study. You've probably seen through our RTP plans and visioning, there are lots of different names thrown around for different types of bus service. We've had enhanced bus, BRT1, BRT3, BRT light, core routes. There's a lot of different things that are thrown around that kind of all mean the same thing. So one of the purposes of this study is to more clearly define what that core route service means. So in the 2015 RTP, we had enhanced bus as a project type, and in the 2019, we've transitioned that to core route. And this is coming from UTA kind of having invested a lot of money in the Front Runner and Tracks system, and it's a great system and relatively built out, and so looking at how can they kind of supplement that service with bus service, and what does that bus service look like. UTA has termed this service as core route, and so the purpose of the study is to evaluate, analyze, and provide more definition to the service and capital investments that are associated with that core route service. So some of those things could be connectivity. Core route service should be north, south, east, west direct service, so it requires an easy transfer and does not involve circuitous kind of windy routes that you don't really know where they go. And if you get on the bus, you don't know where you're gonna end up. It should be very direct, and you should be able to move either east, west, or north, south with a quick transfer. The service should be frequent. It should span earlier in the morning and later at night, as well as during the weekends. There could be things like traffic signal coordination to give buses priority. And there could be capital improvements like station enhancements and sidewalk connectivity. Every transit ride begins and ends with a pedestrian trip or someone walking to the station. So sidewalk connectivity is really important for safety. The second purpose of the study is to define the robust, efficient, and high-quality bus network. So you have seen in the 2019 plan that there are many core route service or core route projects already defined in the plan. So the purpose of the study is to pivot off and build upon the regional transportation plans, maybe going a layer or two deeper than the RTP, working with service planners and operation planners to define that more clearly. Additionally, the core route study will identify areas where core routes may not be appropriate, justified, needed, where you don't need a long bus in that area. And so it will identify areas where innovative mobility solutions might be more appropriate as well. So the goals of the study is to, again, identify an efficient, reliable, and easily understandable bus system, and also to work with stakeholders, cities and counties, transportation partners, and the public to build consensus around this concept, and then to create a clear plan of action working with service planners and operation planners to implement core route service. The five-year service UTA service plan will be coordinated with this core route study, so it's meant to be more of a short-term, medium-term, and long-term implementation plan. So here's an overview of what I talked about if there are any questions about this.
I just want to ask offer two things to this. One, just because not everybody here is as tuned in to the sort of nature of the sort of flow of the planning work we do. Callie was talking about short-term service plans, and so UTA is developing and always looking at the efficiency of their service, where their bus routes are in the short term. And then Callie also mentioned several times the regional transportation plans, or the RTPs, we call them. And we're, many of you have been heavily involved in this, we're continually updating those long-range regional transportation plans. We do that every 4 years, and the one that we're working on right now that we refer to as the 2019 RTP, that's looking 2019 to 2050. Long-term, where are we going to be making investments in all modes of transportation? And, you know, roadway investments and then also transit. And I think part of the point here is that for transit, as Callie said, we've got most of the major capital investments that have been done. Not all, but most in the front runner and tracks. And then providing this core bus route, additional bus service that ties in with that rail system is really a lot of where the investment is going to need to come over the decades to come. That's sort of point one. Point two, where's the money come from to do that for transit? Well, those of you that have been reading those updates from Lanise, the legislative updates, will know that Senate Bill 136 that just passed created some additional options to generate funding at the local level for transportation investment and specifically for transit. For one thing, you know there's these local option sales taxes. Well, for Davis County that has their unimposed third quarter, for Salt Lake County and Utah County that have your unimposed fourth quarter, we now have the ability to impose those either through going to a referendum, ballot referendum, or through action of the county legislative body. So there's more flexibility there to generate revenues that goes for local transportation and for transit. And there's a new authorization just created for an additional 0.20 sales tax imposed by the county that specifically is utilized for transit. So those resources could be utilized to do more of this enhanced core route bus service. So that's something I'm putting this out there, that there's actually revenue options available and there's a lot to consider. And one of the things that as part of the study, UTA, WFRC, MAG working together and coordinating with UDOT, is to think about what are the investments that are needed, what are the options that are there, and then have that conversation at the same time that we're saying, does it make sense to impose these additional local options to generate revenue to pay for some of this service.
Thanks, Andrew.
If I could just add really quickly, we're really excited about this planning process and this project. If you think about what makes driving your car really convenient is you get to go when you want and where you want. you have the flexibility to change your plans. And it's easy. You don't feel like, oh no, what if I miss my bus and I'm going to get stuck? You know that service is always available to you. Transit stations, the rail stations themselves are not a destination, right? That's usually like one step in your trip to get all the way there. And so the bus network is really a critical piece in that. And we envision these core routes being sort of a new class of transit, somewhere between BRT and a local bus where you know it's clearly branded. And if I stand under maybe the red sign, I know that if I wait here, a bus will come within 15 minutes. And I know it's going to run until 11 p.m. And so if I need to change my plans during the middle of the day or I get stuck late at work, I know that this service will always be there throughout the day to get me home. And it will run frequent enough that I have the ability to make transfers really quickly and easily. And it will get me 90% of the way there. And then we'll work with bike sharing programs and great bicycle infrastructure, pedestrian infrastructure to get you all the way to your destination. And in some places, innovative services like maybe a partnership with Uber or Lyft or something like that. So we're really excited about this. We think it will really help break down some of those barriers for transit use. You know, sometimes it's just intimidating for people. And if we know that, you know, this bus goes on this street and it goes from here to here, that's pretty logical. And if I want to get over there, I know that I'll have to transfer at some point to go that direction. And you can kind of visualize where you're going in your head without having to look at a complicated map and a complicated schedule to figure out where to go. So we think this will be a really big step for us in making transit easier for people to use. And we're really grateful to all of our partners, UDOT, MAG, and Wasatch Front Regional Council for partnering with us on this. So thanks, Callie. Great job.
And just, you know, I think Ted asked this really well in his street connectivity study question of why does the ATC care about this, or why are we presenting to you on this? And not everybody's going to commute 20 miles from the outskirts of the region into where they work. And the core routes bus service in the long range transportation plan has a much larger coverage area than our really, you know, well-defined backbone network of rail and transit. And we've done a lot of work in first and last mile connections to get people to fixed guideway transit, to that light rail and front runner service. So we're looking at how we can connect our existing long range bike plans, our regional bicycle networks, to these core route bus services in order to look at first last mile light, or that, you know, other type of first and last mile connectivity, in order to get somebody from east side further up or wherever into their jobs, job centers. So this is a holistic look at transportation, knowing that if we can make, you know, the bus service work that much better and connect to the bike service, that it's going to make it better for everybody.
Where can people review the draft
with
both of these
18
connections?
On our website, wfrc.org. It's the center pane when you open our website. Click on our interactive map and you can turn on and off layers, bike projects, transit projects, road projects, and provide comments.
It'll be open, it's supposed to be open until the 16th. I think we're going to leave it open a little bit longer. We have another outreach meeting doing, so, and then we just met with all the local communities and been working with UDOT and UTA, so we're doing those comments now with the idea that that vision will be approved in May by their council and then we'll phase the plan. So get your comments now on the road transit activity.
Any other questions?
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
Okay, now Scott has to talk about the bicycle event of the year, if not the decade.
The decade of the century. Ever.
Well, I wouldn't say that because, you know, there's going to be other greater events than this. I'm sorry.
Oh.
But, you know, but not nothing. In the foreseeable future.
Yeah, ever. Not in my lifetime. So we finally have details. We've been talking about this for about a year now. Actually, I think last year at the Bike Summit, it was mentioned that Lieutenant Governor Cox had made an announcement and a commitment to ride, and so I'm hoping that that has now come full circle, and we'll, you know, speak with Evan about that a little bit. But we have a date, so the Golden Spoke Ride, which I'll tell you about, put on your calendars now, is Saturday, June 2nd, 2018. That is the National Trails Day. It's also the first Saturday after May is Bike Month. So we, as we looked at dates, We thought about the 31st, which was a Thursday. That would have rounded out and capped off Bike Month. And this seemed like an appropriate day to get community events done and get the public out in addition to this ride. But the idea of the ride is to celebrate the connected network of trails from the mouth of Ogden Canyon to the mouth of Provo Canyon. So if you're not familiar, this is a quick map. Starting at the top, you've got Ogden Parkway connecting to Denver and Rio Grande Rail Trail, which connects to Legacy Parkway, Jordan River, Murdoch Canal Trail, and then the Provo River Trail. And this map doesn't show things like the Parleys Trail, which is a major east-west connectivity trail coming down into the Jordan River. So you also have dozens of feeder trails of regional significance coming east and west into this major backbone network. But you're just over 100 and somewhere 106 to 110 miles, depending on how far up the canyon you ride in either direction, of connected a ribbon of asphalt throughout our region. It's an amazing thing, and it's come together with a lot of work. Jordan River Commission over the last 5 years, completing pieces of the Jordan River trail as it's come together. So the idea is to have elected officials start in the north. We've got Mayor Caldwell committed to do that, and you know, we would ask our Utah County partners if they'd be interested in riding their bikes from the south.
I can stand a ride into Provo.
It's downhill for you guys.
Yeah. So we're going to start two groups of riders about 6:30 to 7 o'clock a.m. and ride them 50 miles in and meet in the center at the new Jordan River Bridge at North Temple near the Fair Park. And that event will then be from about 1 to 3 p.m. with a food truck roundup. We're hoping to get guest speakers, Governor or Lieutenant Governor, maybe Carlos Braceres, and talk about, you know, what this does for our region from an economic development standpoint, from an access to opportunity standpoint. There's, of course, a recreational component to this. And really just celebrate what we have done together collectively. And we would invite anybody around the table who isn't already on the really large email list of folks who are engaged with this. We're holding weekly meetings on Thursday afternoons. To get in touch with me, I can add you to those. We're doing a phone meeting so you can call in if you'd like. We're trying to do computer screen share, so make it really easy for folks to engage and be a part of this great event. And I also, so any questions initially or commitments to ride, just, you know, prepare.
Technically, I think it's downhill both ways.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And we were home. Will has come in late from Green Bike, and we talked to him yesterday about maybe riding it on a green bike.
You know, yeah, I'm committed.
All right. Sweet. So will you click to the next slide? So we've been head down and kind of working on this. There were a few different logo options, but we are looking at branding the event. I'll be sending out this survey to the ATC right after this meeting. The way the surveys have been sent out to our larger group didn't really work with emailing to the ATC, but this is where we're at with the logo. There's three, you know, the colors are a little bit different, the fonts are different, the tires, the spokes. So we have a short survey to gather as much input as we can prior to actually tomorrow afternoon, where we're going to finalize the logo with our committee. So we'll send it out, and if you have just, you know, 60 seconds and you want to take a look at the logos and tell us what your opinions are, then we'll make sure that input is all gathered up and put together.
So I just want to say that this seems like maybe rather superfluous or unimportant about what logo we pick, but this is the level of detail that's going into the planning. I participated at least on a telephone call on this, and this is the kind of thing that these guys are doing. So I think it's going to be a well-planned event.
Yeah.
And at least 20 people, I'd say, more, meeting weekly for about 2 hours, 2.5 hours a week, coordinating with subcommittees looking north-south, right?
Right. And so the idea for WFRC, this is not our event, this is everybody's event, and it also, we're not planning all of the events. We're really looking at the ride and giving people timing of when this larger group of folks will come through their community, and hoping that local communities, between it being National Trails Day and also just the gravity of this scale of connectivity across our region, will be interested in hosting a local event. So I know Jeff and Barry are looking at Davis County hosting an event at the Fair Park. You're going to be discussing that today, I believe, in your ATC meeting or tomorrow. And others have committed. And then we've got the Jordan River Commission, Soren Simonson, who's spoken to a number of elected officials along their river stretches who are interested in hosting local events as well. So really would invite you to do whatever you feel is appropriate for your community, and I think collectively it's going to add up to one really large, really fun event, and without a major expectation that any one group or person is planning all of this.
So I have a question.
Yes.
So, like in Drayton, we have a pretty big bike community. Mm-hmm. Like with my Parks and Trails Commission, if I wanted them to organize something to get involved in this, I think we could get lots of people out.
Yes, please.
How do I get your information?
Yeah, so contact me directly.
So I'll just talk to you afterwards so I can get the information, get you in touch with the Parks and Trails, right, and maybe we can coordinate something in Draper.
Yep, and we will produce Facebook posts and social media posts that are easily, you know, just reshareable and make it real simple for you. We'll have the logo and some simple language. So any local event that you guys are doing, we would love to be cross-promoted with, and we'll share any and all of that information with you and help create content.
So maybe we can talk, so you can talk to me about what you would like in a local event, blah, 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 and get it going.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I like the bottom right one.
All right. It's hard to see from here. The bottom right one is purple. The boots are purple.
That's your favorite too.
Question maker.
Yes, I'd like to comment on this project. It's in strong support. Those who don't ride, this project is going to highlight the trail system north and south. And it will show you the good designs that we ride and the bad designs that we ride. The Murdoch Canal Trail is the best, and you ride that compared to the other trails we ride, and you'll see how important good planning is, how superior that plan is in Utah County relative to the other plans. And so as we build out our communities with bike paths, take a notice how the Murdoch Canal Trail was planned. Really good. Just from a gate point of view, the gates on the Western Denver Rio Grande are right on the street, which is really unsafe from a cyclist perspective. They need to be off. You'll see that the Murdoch Canal Trail relative to the other trails that you'll be riding on that day. So I encourage you all to ride this event. It's going to be great to show the difference in planning on bike paths.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments, questions?
No. I guess the one last piece is, don't feel like you are obligated to ride 50 miles. So two things. One is, we're working with our UTA partners to provide transit passes so you can ride a portion of it and ride a train back. And then also we're going to be looking at the Woods Cross Station and the Murray Central Station as two points to jump in on the ride if you'd like to ride. It's 9 and 11 miles respectively. And then also we're going to hold a group of riders about a mile out from the actual meeting point and make sure that we have a critical mass of folks to ride in. So there will be a meeting point on the south and the north end that you could also partner and come in and ride just that last mile or so. So lots of opportunities to engage without having to slog it out 50 miles on a bike.
And if you don't want to ride at all,
right,
then just come and like celebrate with your family on a Saturday afternoon and food trucks and all that kind of stuff, and yep, you can do that too.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Plus, Scott and Andrew have guaranteed that the weather's going to be great.
It's going to be really good. And no wind.
Got connections.
We're going to have no wind.
Okay. Just a question.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fairly large group gathered at the bridge.
Right.
Since I haven't been to the bridge yet, is there an open space around there somewhere that we're going to be able to get?
Yeah, so just on the north end connection of the bridge, there are two parking lots. One that is Salt Lake County owned, so we know we have access to that. It's the paved parking on the west side of the river that would be on the south side of North Temple, or there's the gravel parking lot that's on the east side of the river that's used as event parking for the fair park, that's on the Rocky Mountain Power property. And Soren Simonson was making phone calls to see if that was available, if there were no other conflicting events on that day.
I think that's actually state-owned.
Is it state-owned?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
great. That might be better.
Make it easier.
We just don't want to, we want to make sure there's no conflicts. That's likely the staging part, but there's also the fair park itself has the new stadium, there's the amphitheater area, so there's a few local spots right there that would have enough space for a gathering of, you know, 500 plus people. All the people, then. Everyone, right? Everyone in the region.
All the people. All the people.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott. Okay, so I guess the last thing we're going to do is, if anybody hasn't seen it yet, you could stay around for a video on open on public meetings training. But before that, are there anybody that wants to tell us about what's going on in their area, in their city or agency?
Go ahead.
Taking off my Morgan County hat, putting my UDOT hat for a minute. Working with a project with Centerville City. By our next meeting, we hope to have advertised a project that will add shoulders and bike lanes through Centerville City. So we're excited about that. I also wanted to thank Scott, Jory, and Heidi for coming to Region 1. Last week, talked about the bike network. Dave was there. Chris Peterson's our region director. It was just a really good discussion regarding our bike network. So thank you for coming down to that.
What road are you improving shoulders on?
The Frontage Road right there, at the, just off I-15.
Okay, thanks.
We're going to put about 2 miles worth of shoulder and bike lanes on both sides.
Is Farmington part of that as well?
No, this is going to Lund Lane.
It's going to Lund. Okay.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I'll do a quick update. So last year we did not host an active transportation and health summit. And this is kind of an area that UDOT's really wanting to have more of a presence in and be more of a champion in with public health. So we're doing really strong health partnerships with our Neighboring Utah program. And so UDOT is going to be sponsoring the next active transportation and health conference. So we're kicking off the planning meetings for that next week.
Just real quick, wanted to update everyone. And first off, this has been one of the most exciting meetings I've been to in a long time.
Especially the chair.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's really satisfying to see. I mean, I've been involved in these off and on since they started, and it's so neat to see the groundswell of enthusiasm and the things that are happening throughout the Wasatch Front to elevate active transportation. I really wanted to let everyone know about our Life Elevated 2020 initiative, and some of you have heard about it, some of you haven't. Of what this is, it's a set of goals, objectives, strategies, and policies that we really feel are going to be critical and really have the greatest impact on maintaining our quality of life and our competitive advantage as a state. And as we've gone through and looked at what strategies are the most important, I mean, there are some like effective and efficient governance, a qualified workforce, equitable and competitive taxes. I mean, these are kind of those big things that governments talk about. But one of the things that really stood out as well and it made it into the top four is thriving communities. And these are the types of communities that Ted was talking about earlier that are connected, that have access to opportunities, that you can get to a job and recreation and entertainment quickly. And so things that fit right in with what we're talking about in these meetings. And so it's very exciting. As kind of a sub-goal of these thriving communities is a goal that we've set to have 1,000 miles of new family-friendly trails over the next 10 years. And so we're excited. We're partnering with Bike Utah on that campaign to really try and expand this message. And so it's very exciting to see the things that are happening. Part of that, of course, we're very excited to see SB 136 and really appreciative to Andrew. He's really been instrumental in shepherding that along and getting it to where it's at. We've also very excited about the Golden Spoke event and encourage everyone's participation in that. Also, for those who are unaware, GOED has some outdoor recreation grants that are just, I believe the period is still open to apply for those grants. And that's going to be part of this 1,000 Miles campaign, trying to get everyone involved in making our communities as connected as possible, and particularly with this emphasis on active transportation. As far as reducing congestion, it may be a very small percentage of people who are going to commute on them, but the impact that they have on quality of life and on their impact is quite oversized. So anyway, just wanted to update everyone on that. And Phil, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add from your perspective on the 1,000 Miles campaign.
We'll probably have a bigger announcement.
Okay,
in the next meeting.
All right, great.
Just when Evan says we, That's significant. So Evan is, most people know, right? Evan is the state planning coordinator. And when he says we, he means the state of Utah and the governor, right? And so the governor, when he came into his current term, said, what are my priorities for the state of Utah for the, you know, for the next 4 years? And that's the, Evan, right? Yes. The list that you were going through of the top priorities, and thriving and healthy communities is one of those top priorities, and 1,000 family friendly miles of bike paths is one key element of that. So this is, you know, the we is a notable we, should say, when Evan talks about what the priorities are. So we've got a great partner in Evan and in Governor Herbert and Lieutenant Governor Cox and the whole governor's administration pushing this work forward. So thank you.
Thank you.
Back here.
So just wanted to follow up on something that Evan said, Office of Outdoor Recreation grant program is open until April 19th. And they are expecting to give out awards in the range of $5,000 to $150,000. So, and I can't remember the total amount that's available, but it's well over, I think it's maybe a couple million dollars.
Yeah, it's up to $5 million.
Like, this is significant. Yeah, there's still plenty of time left, right?
Yes.
For communities to apply.
I just wanted to give a few quick updates from the University of Utah. This is the first meeting that I've been to and have been in this position at the U for about a year now. In the next few weeks, we'll be announcing an e-bike community purchasing program that's available to anyone who's ever had any affiliation with the university, including ever visiting the university. So it's really open to everyone, and we're really hoping to surpass with the local dealers that have applied and been in, and are in the program, and providing discounts for e-bikes to really try to get people out of their cars and be getting more exercise and using trails and other pathways with e-bikes. The U is also experiencing some roadway improvements and working with UDOT. All of the roads surrounding campus that are state-owned will be repaved this summer. There'll be some active transportation improvements as a part of that project. And we're grateful to UDOT for really trying to make some of those improvements as we go through that project. In addition, many of you have been involved with the work we've been doing to try to push for a transit hub or mobility hubs on the university campus to help increase transit service and really help us expand kind of multimodal options for people. That RFP is being written right now, and many of you in the room will be able to see that and review that before it goes out a little bit. So those are three kind of major things happening. Oh, I actually forgot to include, for roadway improvements, we're also rebuilding Wasatch Drive, which is an interior roadway that connects Kopecky Drive with North Campus Drive, if you're familiar with the university. And that will add separated walking and biking lanes.
How do we find out more about your e-bike initiative?
There'll be an official announcement that will come out. Utah Clean Energy is who we're partnering with. I can give you a website now, but there'll be an official announcement that will come out. And if we exchange some information, it'll be on the university website as well. So it'll be quite a bit, I think, in saturation for me.
Thanks. I just had two quick things. I've been told there was a bike summit yesterday, and thanks to those of you who attended. If anyone did attend and has any feedback, we're always looking to improve it. Suggestions for speakers or changing the format, we're always open to ideas. So I hope it was valuable for those of you attended, but also tell us how we can do better. The other thing too, we've been working on, and because of the bike summit and the legislative session and all these other things happening, we haven't been able to promote it yet because there's only so much time in every day. But one of the things we've been working on is trying to get more data about, we always get asked who's riding, how much are they riding, and for the most part, nobody has any great answers. How many cyclists are there? It depends on how you define a cyclist. One of the things we've been working on is a statewide bicycling survey. So we worked with the Utah Foundation, consulted with them on this, but we're hopefully kicking this off tomorrow. But it's a survey looking at road biking, mountain biking, and bicycle commuting, and trying to get a feel for the people who are riding, how much are they riding, where are they riding, what are the barriers that they're facing, whether they be personal barriers, community barriers, and if people are not riding as well, we want those people to answer as well. Same thing, what are the barriers that they're facing? Is it something personal that we can provide in terms of education or training, or is it something that we need to reach out to the communities that they live in to provide better access to mountain bike trails or commuting routes? So we would love any help that people can provide in terms of getting that survey out to people. I've already talked to Brett and the health department, but anyone else who can help us push that out, we'd love to get as much data from around the entire state as we can. And it's going to be open from tomorrow through about mid-April. And just trying to be as act as a supplement to the household transportation survey so that we have data that's not now 5 or 6 years old, to try and the hope being that this can be something that we do on every other or every third year basis so that we have that data on an ongoing basis can be more informed in our decisions.
Are all of those survey questions already set?
They are.
Did you ask a question, and I should, maybe it's offline or I should know this, but did you ask a question about the average distance that somebody commutes?
We do, yeah. Okay. We have distance, time, based on mountain biking, road biking, commuting, so, yeah.
Perfect.
Can you send the link out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Send it to us, and we'll get it forwarded out to our...
Do you have a link to this, your survey or something like that, that we could have these, we can have that community at least get an email about that so we all know about that?
Yeah, we're still getting our ducks in a row today, so we can send it out tomorrow. So yeah, I'll send that to Scott and have him forward it out. If anyone else needs it and doesn't get it through that, then let me know.
Can we promote it out through our networks?
Yeah, please do. That's the goal. We'd love to have thousands upon thousands from riders and non-riders. So.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes. Somebody, please, we got to watch a video otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that Joey and I have been talking about looking at a larger regional look at bike share planning and partnering with all of you folks here, UTA, WFRC. And no details to really share yet, but just that we're looking at trying to take advantage of all the great planning opportunities that are taking place and how we can look at the bike sharing around the world. So, one more to share.
Before we're done, I think we had a few more people
that
jumped
on. Okay.
Asking those folks.
So other than Myron, do we have anybody else on the phone? Okay.
Oh. I just thought of an additional thing relative to my earlier presentation. I hope you don't mind, but I wanted to just clarify that street connectivity and connectivity issues is not just for communities with a lot of vacant land that have the ability to lay out new streets. If you wanted to explore ways to improve just ped connectivity in your community and do some strategic retrofits, could explore that. And I just wanted to also clarify that if you just wanted to kick the tires on the idea and you wanted to have a WFRC staff to just come and help you do an assessment of where you're at and then you can doodle on it, that we're available to do that. So thank you.
Thanks. Okay, let's watch a movie.
Do you want to explain?
So open meetings training, most of you know, most of you have either seen this, maybe, but anyway, once a year we're supposed to review the requirements of open meetings. This is an open meeting, and most of us are involved in other open meetings, so it's valuable, I guess. But I'll sign a certificate for anybody that stays.
On our I don't know where it is.
Is Katie coming over to just make sure that my phone's charged?
That'd be great. That'd be outstanding. Thank you. Thank you.
Remember.
Forgot to do this.
Welcome to the Office of State Auditor's introductory video on the Open and Public Meetings Act. In this video, going to discuss the basic requirements for local government entities as specified in Utah's Open and Public Meetings Act. It is the responsibility of a governing body's presiding officer to ensure that the body's members receive annual training on the requirements of
the law. There is coffee over there to keep you awake.
By the end of this video, you should understand what the Utah Open and Public Meetings Act requires of local government entities and how to fulfill those requirements. The Open and Public Meetings Act recognizes that governing bodies exist to conduct the people's business and contains provisions designed to help ensure that an entity's actions and deliberations are conducted openly. In order to understand what the Open and Public Meetings Act requires, it is first important to understand what the Act considers an open meeting. An open and public meeting is when the majority of a governing body meets to discuss or act upon the business of the entity. Public meetings include workshops and executive sessions, but do not include chance or social meetings. A public hearing is the portion of an open meeting at which members of the public are provided with a reasonable opportunity to comment on the subject of the hearing. If necessary, the governing body may limit speaking time. Public hearings are required when an entity imposes or increases a tax or fee or adopts a budget. An electronic meeting is a public meeting convened over the phone or by other electronic means. A governing body may convene an electronic meeting only if they have adopted a resolution, rule, or ordinance governing the use of electronic meetings. Under this Act, all meetings must be open to the public unless the meeting is closed to discuss one of the following: the character, competence, or health of an individual, the deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems, collective bargaining issues, pending or reasonably imminent litigation, the purchase, sale, lease of real property, including any form of water right or shares, if an open discussion would prevent the entity from completing the transaction on the best possible terms, investigative proceedings regarding allegations of criminal misconduct, and finally, discussion of information that is required to be maintained as private or protected by the Utah Procurement Code, including trade secrets. A closed meeting may be held only upon the affirmative vote of two-thirds of the governing body members present at a public meeting. During a closed meeting, a governing body may not do any of the following: interview a person applying to fill an elected position, discuss filling a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, discuss the character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of the person whose name was submitted for consideration to fill a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, or approve or pass any ordinance, resolution, rule, regulation, contract, or appointment. If a meeting is closed to discuss the character, competence, or health of an individual, or the deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems, then the person presiding shall sign a sworn, written statement affirming that the sole purpose for closing the meeting was to discuss one of these issues. In these cases, no recording or written minutes are required. However, if a closed meeting is held for any other reason, the closed portion of the meeting must be recorded and detailed written minutes may be kept. Both the recording and written minutes of a closed meeting are considered protected records. The governing body may call an emergency meeting to discuss an urgent matter due to unforeseen circumstances. In order to hold an emergency meeting, 1, best notice practical of the time, location, and topics to be considered must be given. 2, an attempt to contact all governing body members must be made. And 3, a majority of the governing body members must approve the meeting. The Open and Public Meetings Act imposes certain notice requirements on local government entities. Entities that hold regular meetings, which are scheduled in advance over the course of a year, need to give public notice at least once a year of their meeting schedule. This notice must include the date, time, and place of the meetings. For entities that do not hold regular meetings, the governing body must give at least 24 hours public notice specifying the date, time, and place. All meetings, whether regularly scheduled in advance over the course of a year or scheduled as needed, must provide no less than 24 hours notice of meeting agendas. The method of providing public notice for meetings and agendas depends upon whether a public hearing will be held during a portion of the meeting. It is important to distinguish between notice requirements for regular meetings and notice requirements for a meeting that will include a public hearing. If a public hearing is going to be held, the notice must be published in at least one issue of a newspaper. If a newspaper of general circulation is not available, then written notice should be posted in three public places within the entity's boundaries. For regular meetings, an entity is only required to notify a local media correspondent and does not need to pay for the notice if the newspaper chooses not to publish it. Additionally, for public hearings, notice generally must be given at least 7 days prior to the meeting. For both regular meetings and public hearings, written notice must be posted at the principal office of the governing body, or, if no such office exists, at the location where the meeting is to be held. Governing bodies are required to post notice of a public meeting on the Utah Public Notice website. By posting on the website and providing the email of the newspaper or local media correspondent, governing bodies meet the requirement to notify a newspaper or local media correspondent. However, all other notice requirements for a public hearing, such as publishing notices in a newspaper, still apply. Typically, posting on the Utah Public Notice website is done by a clerk or secretary. However, it is the responsibility of the governing body to ensure this requirement is being properly met. The public notice website is administered by Utah State Archives, who has prepared a training manual and quick guide for owners and posters, as well as training sessions that may be accessed on their website at archives.utah.gov. Public meeting agendas must include the following: topics to be considered, reasonably specified, and each topic listed under an agenda item on the meeting agenda. The governing body may not consider a topic in an open meeting that was not on the agenda. If a new topic that was not on the agenda is raised by the public during an open meeting, the governing body may discuss the topic. However, final action may not be taken on the new topic during that meeting. If your entity is increasing a fee or undergoing truth in taxation, please be aware that there are additional notice and posting requirements. For help in these areas, please carefully study applicable laws or consult with your legal advisor. In addition to notice requirements, the Open and Public Meetings Act imposes certain requirements on the information that must be recorded during a meeting and shared afterward with the public. Meeting minutes and an audio recording need to be kept for all open meetings with limited exceptions. When a meeting, whether open or closed, is required to be recorded, the recording must be complete and unedited. It must include all portions of the meeting from the commencement through the adjournment. Recordings of open meetings must be made available to the public for listening within 3 days of the meeting. Every entity needs to establish and implement procedures for the governing body's approval of the written minutes of each meeting. Pending minutes are written minutes of an open meeting that have been prepared in draft form and are subject to change before being approved by the governing body. Pending minutes must contain a clear indication, such as a draft or pending watermark, that the governing body has not yet approved the minutes, or that the minutes are subject to change until they have been approved. After holding an open meeting, an entity must make the pending meeting minutes available to the public within 30 days. Approved minutes are written minutes of an open meeting that have been approved by the governing body. Approved minutes of an open meeting are the official record of the meeting and must be made available to the public within 3 business days. Whoever is responsible for taking the minutes during meetings needs to be familiar with what the Utah Open and Public Meetings Act requires be contained in the minutes. When a governing body closes a meeting, the following must be publicly announced and entered into the minutes of the open meeting at which the closed meeting was approved: the reason or reasons for holding the closed meeting, the location where the closed meeting will be held, and the vote of each member of the governing body, either for or against the motion to go into closed session. The recording and any written minutes of a closed meeting need to include the date, time, and location of the meeting, the names of the governing body's members present and absent, and the names of all others present, except for where disclosure would infringe upon the confidentiality necessary to fulfill the original purpose of closing the meeting. Great job. You've now finished the Open and Public Meetings Act video. You're ready to move on to the video evaluation.
So thank you for everybody for staying, and I need a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, thanks everybody.